What is up? Welcome in. Happy Tuesday, y'all. Happy Tuesday. Chatting about cannabis. Back to normal. We're back to earth from Thursday, it seems, Javi. But we'll get on to all that. I'm just happy to see my favorite Argentinian reporter alongside with me today. What's up, man?
Doing great. Did you, by any chance, listen at the very end of the Cannabis Insider musical intro, a sound that wasn't there before, like a shh at the very end?
No.
I don't know. Maybe I'm
No, I did not. However, now I'm going to be listening for it. Travis Owens, what is up? Strictly Free Sports, thank you for tuning in again. Appreciate it, y'all. We have two amazing interviews for you today. One with a very cool, I think, I don't know if I can call them up and coming. They're pretty established. But a very cool software company in the cannabis industry. Super excited to talk to their rockin', super powerful female founder, Stacey Ranowski. I think I said that correctly. We'll see.
Actually, after that, Stacey's backstage. Can you nod? And if we nailed it, yes, you nailed it.
Nailed it on the first go. That's what I'm talking about. And then right after that, we are chatting with a member of Air Wellness to chat. Honestly, we're getting some great insights on what happened last week with Biden and some of the ramifications. Obviously, you know, positives, maybe what we can expect. There's some from a leading MSO, a multi-state operator in the space, what it means for them. And I'm going to ask them what they're doing to help move this forward. And I'm sure, Javi, you never have easy questions. So it's going to be a fun one, man. But we always start today with what is on Javier's mind. What are you thinking about to start us off, Javi?
I have a few interesting news items. The first one is a new report out of the Federal Reserve Bank, which shed economic impact on the, that shed light on the economic impact of cannabis legalization in recent years. And basically, it confirmed what we all know. It's a boon for real estate, for new jobs, and for tax revenue. An analyst from Kansas City, one of the branches of the central bank in the U.S., for those who don't know, the Federal Reserve Bank is basically a central bank in the U.S., collected data from several states under the jurisdiction of this Kansas City Federal Reserve Bank or branch, the 10th district, and looked at the cannabis industry and how it impacts. And they said, overall, the marijuana industry has had a significant effect on the economics of the 10th district states in the initial years of legalization or after legalization. The emergence of the industry has led to higher employment and higher demand for commercial real estate. What a surprise.
Big time. Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that at all. Who would have guessed?
You know, who would have guessed? But also, what an interesting kind of correlation between that and the MedMen story we were talking about early last week. If, you know, federally, they actually get away from being in federal court and they somehow come out in the positive, does that scare away real estate providers in normal regulated markets? I don't know. It all remains to be seen. It's all up in the air right now. But, I mean, an interesting correlation there.
It's very interesting that you bring up MedMen as well. Last night, I was chatting with one of our writers, a PhD candidate, Nicolas José Rodríguez at Benzinga. Go check out his work, by the way. And he was telling me, I remember that interview you did with Adam Bierman, one of the founders, the original founders of MedMen. Mm-hmm. And he remembered one part of the interview where he said, like, this industry is so new that you basically make it up as you go and you can do whatever you want. You know, it's all about experimenting, is all about. And when I say do whatever you want, I mean within regulations. I mean in terms of innovation, do as you please.
Without going to jail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're continuing to run on that model. So I would say that is accurate. Travis Owens, drop in the app name, man. Pump it a little bit. He just dropped another note. We'll read that in a second. Choom, C-H-O-O-F. A lot of cash and a lot of less assets now from that cash. That's all I'm going to say on that one. That being said, honestly, Choom was up and coming. Sold off, 9 dispensaries to High Tide. Have a good amount of cash on hand. Javi, what do you think they do with that cash, man? Do you think they cash out? Do you think they look to dive in again to cannabis with some better assets? I don't know.
I mean, It's hard to tell. I do understand that they're getting out of retail, right? What they're going to do with the cash, I don't really understand. I'm sure that they will continue to expand their footprint in you know, different areas or sectors within the vertical integration chain. Yeah, I mean, honestly, we do see a lot of companies divesting assets also just for like general operating money, right? We saw a lot of sale leasebacks last year. We saw a lot of companies divesting non-core assets this year, right? Especially in Canada, it seems like cash constraints have led to divesting assets in different ways to make capital and cash available for expansion and general operational stuff, right? You know, another thing I was talking about with Nico last night, right? You know, we're talking about growing cannabis in Latin America, about different ideas, different models, craft growers. And I would tell you what I do. Growing cannabis is not profitable. There's actually one company that did crowd growing called Juicy Fields, which is definitely now has gone under. Yeah. I was always quite bearish regarding their model. And I told that, you know, I told them that to their faces. There's a very interesting Twitter thread where I break down what happened with them. But, you know, you would go into the website and the first thing they said was invest in cannabis. It's profitable. And I sat down with them last year and was like, dude, how is it profitable? I remember in December I was in Uruguay and I asked them, like, how is it profitable? No cannabis companies are really profitable out there by growing cannabis. Very few are. They were like, which ones? Every one of them. Doesn't seem to be a very profitable business unless you integrate and you do retail or you do something else.
Well, that is why the MSOs are currently leading the industry. When you say, however, there is a shift happening. You can't deny that now investors are starting to enjoy the IP and the potential of brands, and they're buying into the likes of, you know, companies like, I'm not saying these companies themselves, but just off the top of my head, Old Pal, Her Highness, Black Buddha, these brands that MSOs are now buying. MSOs are now partnering with Can, Stizzy. Yeah. I mean, these are all companies that are brands that have are asset light, for that matter. That being said, Javi, let's not go too deep into one story here yet. We'll get there. But that being said, I want to mention one thing, and then you get a 2-minute rapid fire round. Man, we fell back down to earth real hard after last week. I mean, to be expected, but I will say a positive development this morning in my mind is Cory Booker. Once again, however, as clear as I think he's ever said it, he's confident that some sort of federal legislation could get done in the lame duck session. That is interesting to me. I'm excited to see what that means. But I'm pretty bullish on something else happening this year. I don't know about you, but he hasn't really said it that plainly yet. So here's to hoping, right?
Yeah.
That being said, stocks did not hold.
Biden's announcement the other day, a Twitter hoax instantly came out. You know, this Twitter user, I'm not going to name them. It doesn't make any sense. But they came out saying that Reuters was reporting that Nancy Pelosi had purchased 10 million shares of Canopy Growth in Canada, which, of course, was false.
They picked the only stock.
They never reported this, but people will buy whatever they see on Twitter, which is sad. Go check your source.
Y'all, Twitter is not like rule of thumb here. Twitter is not life. let's say that over and over with each other here. And that includes Javier Haas. Big misinformation guy right there. just kidding. No. Just kidding. No. Web3 and cannabis. I will say, Javier, weren't we the first ones to have like our publication at a virtual dispensary or something? That was all you, right?
The first Western hemisphere or Western world digital publication in general to launch in the metaverse. With El Planteo and with Benzinga Cannabis. You can find us on Crypto Bet Sales.
There you go. All right. Find us in the metaverse, y'all. That's awesome. Thanks to Javier Haas thinking ahead, y'all. That being said, yeah. 2-minute round, and then we're going to go to a lady who's much smarter than us.
So we're talking Choom. You know, who is doing pretty well from Canada? Fire and Flower Holdings, FFLWF on the OTC, FAF in Canada. they announced that they are continuing to expand or planning to continue to expand and launch cannabis sales in several U.S. states. They're also leveraging their Hifyre technology platform in the United States. Also talking about technology, Leafly Holdings, LFLY, has partnered with Blaze, which is a point-of-sale platform to expand, or actually they're expanding a pre-existing partnership.
Blaze is loading up the partnerships, aren't they? Didn't they just partner with another huge tech company as well? I can't remember which one that was, but yeah, keep an eye on Blaze, y'all, an interesting POS company there. Private, but good one. And I will say, going back to Fire and Flower, keep an eye on Hifyre. That's the data that Cantor Fitzgerald uses to look at the Canadian LPs. Hifyre provides data to a ton of investment banks and analysts, so it's going to be interesting to see what they do in the U.S. market. Anyways, Javi, continue.
I mean, I can do like a couple of quick headlines and let's jump to the interview. I'm more interested in that. But 2 in 3 Americans agree with Biden's cannabis pardon. As many as 62% of adults thought that marijuana decriminalization is important to rectify past racial injustices as well. 72% of Americans support how the law classifies marijuana. Super interesting. One more item. Legendary NHL star Brett Hull. We did an article where he talks about weed, his new strain, cannabis for chronic pain. He will launch his medical marijuana strain called Brett Hull number 16. This will launch in Mississippi at the Hippos Dispensary.
I feel like we could have a conversation. Brett Hull 16, COVID-19, what does it actually mean? But that being said, we have two awesome interviews here for you today. We're going to bring those amazing executives to you now. And then after that, I believe, Javi, you have another special segment for us in terms of product review. Stay tuned to what Javier has in store for us today. Ooh, a tease. The more you know. That was like the more you know rainbow. All right, let's do it. Aaron Thomas, let's bring over Stacey Ranowski, CEO of Canix. Stacey, welcome in. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're pumped to have you. Pumped. The leading tech of our generation. Actually, we're going to explain why I'm saying that, but give us an introduction to yourself, to Canix.
Absolutely. So I'm Stacey. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Canix, which is a wholesale ERP system used by cannabis cultivators, manufacturers, and distributors.
Fantastic. Now, a follow-up real quick as your introduction, and then I'm going to let Javi take it. You recently, probably in the last 6 months to a year, won Best Disrupting Tech. Is that correct? The TechCrunch?
Won TechCrunch Disrupt in 2020. Yes.
I wish to work around.
You're close. Yeah.
Awesome. So that's really cool. If I'm not mistaken, probably the first cannabis company to even get close to winning that, let alone winning that. Can you talk a little bit about what that means in terms of bringing our tech to the normalized regulated markets and vice versa?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we were the first cannabis company to win. So we were very honored with that. And it was really exciting. I mean, what I really was most pumped about showing was that cannabis tech can be the leading tech of any vertical. Cannabis tech doesn't need to be the leftovers or, the second tier. And I was really happy to show, cannabis tech can go up against rocket ships and neobanks and, everything else that investors love to look at. That's our goal at Canix, to really bring the industry, the leading forefront tech to the cannabis industry. So it was very cool to get that external recognition.
So cool.
You got into the cannabis space after consulting for a cannabis company in California about 3 years ago, and you identified some operational challenges, which then sparked the idea to create Canix. What were some of these operational challenges that you identified early on? How does Canix solve them? And which ones are still not being solved and in need of a solution?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the solutions I was building was helping to connect their CRM and their distribution systems. And it really, honestly, the recurring thought I had was, how do I have a job? Shouldn't there be an API or a different system that pushes from one system to another? I'd worked in private equity before and seen a lot of industries where they did have that software and that one source solution. So I honestly kept wondering, like, do they just not know that something else is out there? But the more I learned and the more I, saw the cannabis industry, I was like, there isn't one source of truth for your data. Another thing that was really surprising, I saw that they were doing a lot of costing, like their bill of materials costing on Excel. And like coming from a financial background, I was like, you need to know your numbers. Like that is critical. Like you need to know how much you're making, how profitability compares against different SKUs, against different strains, different harvest batches. So what Canix is tackling at a high level is becoming that one system to run your wholesale cannabis business. And where we really focus is on inventory management and product costing. Product costing is very, very interesting in the cannabis industry because it's still, I mean, it's never been legal before, so it's never been done. So it's honestly just a really exciting space to work in.
How saturated is what you do? Because it seems to be an ever-changing side of this industry and a lot of perspectives in terms of ERP is, you know, what we're, I would say, associating ERP with would be maybe public companies that have been around forever. But there's a lot of tech out there that hasn't been, you know, publicly investable. So how much of this market has yet to be trailblazed?
Yeah, it's a great question. So how saturated? I mean, honestly, what we see is that most major companies don't have an ERP system that they currently love or that's even doing what they needed to do at a minimum. So I would estimate that like 75% of like major, let's call them like 3+ license operators, don't have the tech that they need to run their business right now.
Jeez.
Honestly, really surprising. But when you go in and you see these Excel sheets and, you know, QuickBooks and all these like Google Forms happening, it's a little shocking. And honestly, like what gets me up in the morning, I'm like, people deserve better. Like no one should be doing that data entry.
I feel so identified. Literally 2 days ago, we just acquired an ERP system for our Latin American outlet, El Panteo. And we were doing everything in spreadsheets for like over 2 years. And then like our finance guy, he's like at finance and like, he's got a master's in finance. He goes like, dude, we need an ERP software.
Yeah.
Don't know. What are they for? Right. Like for in layman's terms, what are they for? Why are ERP systems important? Right.
Sure. So it stands for Enterprise Resource Planning Software. And what is it for? You, as a like manufacturing business, it's critical to know how much inventory you have on hand, how much that inventory is worth, how much you can expect to sell in the future, and how much you've sold in the past. So really getting that like mapping and that system of record for your business, that's what they're for, because you need that to make informed decisions. Past isn't always an indicator of the future, but you certainly want to look at it to understand what might happen in the future. And with cannabis and compliance and the amount of data that people have to capture, we're able to do some really interesting things in the forecasting space to be able to predict how much product is going to be moved like in the future.
How long has it taken you to build Canix to what it is now?
I mean, we're still building it. Like, I mean, I have an engineering background and my co-founder also has an engineering background. And I expect that we'll be like a product-led company for the next 24 months. I don't see actually a future where we don't like have a very active engineering team. We always want to improve and bring the latest and greatest to our customers. So yeah, I don't really see an end in sight to like what we're building.
And then one more quick question, then I'll let Javi take it from there. But in terms of where you're building to right now, the client base, do you see the lack of good technology in ERP, the lack of companies really understanding what they need to balance their books and to have their numbers in front of them? Is that a reason why some of the balance sheets in this industry are just terrible? Does that play into it?
Oh, gosh. It's such an involved, also good question. I think it's definitely a, yeah, actually, I do think it's a pretty big part of it. I won't speak to why like a balance sheet might look the way it will, but I think that knowing your numbers allows you to make better decisions. If you can see it plainly and you can see it accurately and clearly and in a timely fashion, like not closing your books over the next 6 weeks before the decisions have been made, I do think that leads to better decisions. And I do think that would lead to a more financially solvent industry all around.
Here's a non-tech related question to close it up. One of the things that most surprised me in a positive way and impressed me in a positive way when looking at your company and its makeup, it's 50-50 in terms of gender, right? Or assumed gender, of course, because I really don't know which is the actual gender of people. But you look at it and you go like, it looks like 50-50 men and women, right? Is this on purpose? And if so, why? What do you expect to accomplish from this? Or is it just accidental?
Interesting. I'd say it's intentional in the way that we look for candidates who lead to a diversity of like intellectual thinking patterns, I'll call for lack of a better word, because we, as a company, we want to be challenged like internally. We want like, you know, opposing views so we can really have that discourse lead to the best decision forward for Canix. And I do think that having differing backgrounds, gender, race, et cetera, does lead to having differing viewpoints in many cases. We look for the best candidate for the job, but I've noticed how good it is to have people on my team who just come from honestly a different position than I do. And we're able to kind of have that like intellectual push and pull. It's really fun. And I think we get really cool things out of it.
That's awesome. So where can they find you? If you want to drop in anything we can expect in the coming months leading into 23, we'd love to keep in touch with Canix. I mean, a super cool up and coming tech has been a through line of our shows recently. So it's really nice to have you on.
Yeah. You can check us out at canix.com. We're on Instagram at Canix Software. And we're going to be at MJ BizCon. If any of your listeners are there, we'd love to see you. We have a booth. Please come
we'll
stop by.
Yes.
We'll see you there.
We will see you there for sure, Stacey. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time. And congratulations on everything you've accomplished so far.
Thank you.
All right, Javi, I mean, another amazing tech leader. Stacey's obviously building something to last over there. And I think it's worth pointing out, and I didn't want to make her talk to this, but a lot of her competition isn't that great. There are some out there that are fantastic. But like, it really does seem like she has built the grounding for what could be an industry leader. There are plenty other ERP software providers out there, but I mean, some are just cobbled together, and you know I'm right.
I want to quote your brother, Patrick Lane, on this one, and I'm going to say shots fired.
I'll say that.
To another company, and I won't say which one, during our Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference, and it was the only part of the conference that was not filmed. So I am extremely happy that only a few people in the room, because it was a VIP breakfast, heard that. It was okay. It was justified. But
it was justified. Well, good. I'm glad we can justifiably fire some shots. Travis Owens, thank you for dropping that in. Super cool, man. Stoner Talk. I'm going to check it out for sure. Strictly Three Sports, getting ready for your product review, Javi.
We already did a review on the Puffco Proxy 2 weeks ago. Go check it out.
Oh, we did. You got to check it out. Yeah, we got to put on socials too. With that being said, Javier, do you want to introduce our next guest? I'm pumped.
No, you do it.
Oh, you want me to do it? All right. Drum roll, please. Everybody. Kari Edwards, head of corporate and social responsibility from Ayr Wellness, that is OTC listed, AYRWF. Welcome in, Kari. How are you?
I'm great, guys. Thank you for having me. This is exciting for me to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. Appreciate that, man. Welcome in. So we always love a quick introduction about you, how you got into cannabis. But I obviously want to dive into some topical items, too. But let's start with you.
Kari Edwards, long-standing Brooklynite. Spent 25 years of my career in government, mostly state government and healthcare. Ran for Brooklyn Borough President last year, didn't win. Got a phone call from Jennifer Drake, the COO of AIR, asked me if I'd be interested in cannabis. I was like, nah, it's not my thing. But had a chance to sit down with John Sendelman, and it was like two long lost brothers. His focus on what he wanted his company to be, Force for Good, the things that I've worked on throughout my life in disparity, social justice, and he wanted to actually merge the two with a focus, obviously, from a cannabis standpoint. And I took the job, and I have to say that I have been living an amazing dream, changing the lives of people all around the country, all around their footprint. And, you know, kudos to cannabis in that respect.
Yeah, this is a really interesting perspective. So thank you for that background. So you have not been, amongst the front lines for cannabis decriminalization for years, as a lot of people that we speak with have. However, that being said, you understand the importance of it. I'd love your thoughts, you know, working on the corporate side of the cannabis space, coming from a government relations standpoint, having been there to try and fight for the people, going for some sort of public office. What is your initial reaction to the executive action from President Biden last week?
It was a thank you, right? You know, a lot of people say about time or ecstatic. It was really thank you, because a lot of the work that we do at AIR, it's really about the people, and watching how people truly suffer on the most minute levels because of cannabis. It's heartbreaking. You know, we did my first big role. My first big project is on February 27th of this year. We did a 5-state expungement event in Illinois, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Jersey. And really what we found was that folks wanted to get their records clear, because even though they were free, they still had what we call paper handcuffs. And, you know, and I put that in my remarks, yeah, because the paper handcuffs, as well as Biden alluded to it, are the ways that people can't get healthcare, can't get education, can't get jobs outside of New York City. And kudos to my state for expunging cannabis convictions. But outside of New York State, you know, folks are really suffering, right? Housing, you can't get into public housing. You can't get into federal HUD housing with this over your head. So it really was a thank you, because he really opened up a pathway for folks to get a fresh start. And so the things that we do at AIR, we call ours Changing Legacies, because the legacies of criminalization follows these folks throughout their lives. And so as we expunge them, as we work to expunge them, we now change their entire legacy on how they move forward with their family. So we get to remove those paper handcuffs.
I have two back-to-back questions I would like to ask, if Mr. Lane will allow me. First one is, you said, you know, cannabis wasn't really my thing, but then, you know, something convinced you. What was it? You know, why was cannabis not your thing? Or why did you think it was not your thing? And then what convinced you to change your mind? That is the first question.
Well, I grew up, and I look a lot younger than I really am, right? But I grew up in a generation where cannabis was seen as a bad thing, right? You know, it's a Schedule 1 drug, but also in communities of color, in West Indian communities, it's like, you can't do that, right? That's the devil's brew. It's like taking drugs. Interestingly enough, I'm a type 1 diabetic. And when I started dating my now wife at the time, you know, she was a cannabis consumer. And I'm like, you know, it's not my thing. And she's like, try it. And so at the time I had high sugars, like, you know, so my eyes, I'm wearing glasses now, but my eyes are really bad because of the diabetic retinopathy in the back of my eyes. And so I smoked occasionally. And when I went to my eye doctor, he was like, you know, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm not doing anything. He's like, your sugars are still the same, but the spots are cleared up in the back of your eyes. And I'm like, what? So I leaned over and I'm like, well, I'm smoking like once a week. And he was like, keep doing it. I'm like, keep doing it. So it wasn't my thing because of, again, you working in government, it's a public thing. I was working in healthcare, got drug tested. But understanding that the way people medicated, the way that people actually use this thing as a healing plant, was to start breaking the misconceptions that I had. And so the offer really for me was to change people's lives. And that's what ended up working me into this space, right? Folks are being locked up. Folks are being, you know, persecuted. You know, we talk about healthcare inequities. How about it being a place where, you know, kids, not kids, but folks can't take gummies to fall asleep because of all these things. And so it really changed my perspective, and it's now become my mission. It's become my mission to really explain to the world this plant heals too, and it's not this thing that we've been criminalized and locked up for. And the last point I'm going to make, the hospital I used to work at is in Southeast Brooklyn, 26,000 a year median income, third grade reading level, the highest incarceration rates because of something as simple as cannabis. And so now you're talking about almost a million people in an area in Brooklyn that are being, you know, targeted because of something that everybody can smoke now for free with no problem. And so that also changed my perspective on what we are doing.
And the other one is, you know, talking a little bit about mission-driven things, right? You know, CSR, corporate social responsibility, is one of those where it's, you know, it's not always easy to measure the returns in financial terms, right? And a lot of people often wonder if it's a real thing or not, right? So this might sound like a facetious question, but I kind of suspect your answer, of course, is you know, this is a real thing. But CSR, real or BS, right? And if real, why? Imagine you're trying to help a friend save their CSR department and their company because they want to shut it down, right? What does CSR really do for a company or society?
It opens up opportunity, right? So when I ran for office, you know, being a borough president, you would have had $100 million in capital funding. And so what are you able to do? Go to small groups and give them money and open up the opportunities for them, either to create more jobs for other folks and all these great things. It's no different in cannabis. It's no different, especially for CSR. We have a responsibility to now infuse all of the money that we're making, all of the opportunities we have to educate our consumers, to open up opportunities. When we do food pantries, when we do expungement events, when we do housing things, it's not a cannabis-related activity. It's a community-related activity. And one thing that John Sindelman said is like, look, I don't want to be the best cannabis company doing corporate and social responsibility. I want to be the best company. And so what that means to me is that we turn around and we go into these communities that are not only affected by the war on drugs, but that need a economic push or need a partnership. And we're saying, hey, we're not going to do those things. So to all of the naysayers who just think it's like, you know, show, it's we have documentation that it's not show, that we've turned people, we've given people opportunities for education, we've opened up opportunities for jobs. You know, when I tell you that folks that come to me all the time are like, you know, I would love to learn how to cultivate, but it's not legal in my state. I'm like, do you want to come to New Jersey? You want to come to Pennsylvania? We'll hire you, and we've done it. And so it's really exciting to do the work of people, but obviously using, again, this healing plant to do those things.
From your perspective, as a former healthcare employee and worker, when you look at how this industry has been divvied up between medical states, between recreational states, really recreational adult use seems to be just increased access more than anything else. Is there a place for prescription cannabis in the future? Is there a place for cannabis within healthcare, or does it just become more access in the future? And that's what we focus on. And I think this is particularly interesting to get your answer, being that you lead CSR for an MSO.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's twofold, right? I think you can kind of walk down a street and a half with that, right? More access obviously does, for whether it's an MSO or any company trying to get in, give them a broader, you know, set of folks to deal with. But there is a need for the medical side, right? There's a need for pain management. There's a need for Crohn's disease and lupus. There's a need to understand, you know, how people's, you know, sleep apnea work. And so I think in those respects, we should really look at prescribing it from a medical standpoint, because yeah, some folks may not. I don't know anything about terpenes, right? That's not my thing. I don't know what keeps me up, what makes me go to sleep. But there are folks that do that. And, you know, one of the things, and I like to shout out this guy, Russell. He's a security guard at one of our dispensaries in Jersey, right? He said to me, he said, Mr. Edwards, I locked up people 25 years for this. He was a cop in New Jersey. And he said, now that I see them coming into our stores And they're basically, this is the only way they deal with, you know, stage four cancer. This is the only way they deal with like joint pains. I realize that this particular way is helping folks, but there needs to be people to prescribe that, right? Because, you know, as much as you could go to a butt tender and be like, hey, I want to stay up and go to sleep, it's a little deeper when you have an ailment like me, like I have diabetes. It's a little deeper. So I do think that there should be a real opening and opportunity for prescriptive cannabis. And it'll help the medical industry as well. But I do think that it needs to be a real focus on that, which, you know, I did see Biden spoke about that as well. I give him a lot of credit, like in his remarks, research for all of those things. He kind of really broke those things down, which was a really thoughtful reality what he did.
All right, last question here, then we got to wrap up, my friend, but this has been very insightful, and thank you for joining us, honestly, and on short notice as well, so thank you. What, when it comes to decriminalization, we've not asked anybody this yet, but now that we have pardons for, what was it, some 6,000-plus people, mm-hmm. I think, and we have a pretty heavy-handed encouragement of states to follow that, what phase of the game are we in now? What inning? Say out of 9 innings are we in when it comes to decriminalization? Because up until Thursday of last week, we were pretty early on. How far does that take us in into where the final end game of marijuana has been officially taken away from criminalization and wiped away?
I mean, I would say we're in the third inning because part of where we have to look at, right? It was heavy-handed to ask the states to do that. Will the states do that? You know, all politics is local. Will the states and cities do that? A lot of the expungement events that we're doing, you know, we're in states, you know, like Massachusetts that still have some situations where expungement is a difficult process. Connecticut's a difficult process. So when the states start to do it, we're getting more in the fifth and sixth inning. But then what do we do afterwards? What's the education? What is the support system once you are expunged to now rehabilitate that trauma? Because, you know, folks who have paper handcuffs have trauma, too. And so now we can't move to the end of the game without dealing with the trauma of folks who've lived with this almost 20, 30 years, or folks who are like me, who are at the time a little worried to do it. And so I would say we're in the third inning, you know, hopefully with the bases loaded. And Aaron Judge at the plate. So that's the hope. That's the hope.
All right. Well, hopefully we get number 60.
What that metaphor means, I got to be very honest.
I got you, Kari. I got you.
Something.
I'm there with you. Kari Edwards, head of CSR at Air Wellness. Thank you so much for joining us again, sir. Let's get an update soon. This was very insightful.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Be well. Awesome. Javi, we went long today, but we had two awesome guests, man. I mean, how can we not? Right?
We're going to do the product review for the much-expected Higher Wheat segment at the beginning of the show on Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific.
I feel hurt. All right, Kari Sports, I apologize. I lied to the audience. I said we were doing it today. I lied. That's fine.
I'm going to show you one of the things that I'm going to review, and I'm not going to tell you what it is.
The magic. Very magic. It looks like a police like nightstick. Anyways, Javier Haas will start the show on Thursday at 4 Eastern time sharp. Don't be late. Don't be a square. Be here with his product review of whatever that beautiful floating thing was on our screen. That being said, Javier, any last words for our audience, for the ones that stood around and stuck with us?
The quick reminder is always like and subscribe. Check us out every Tuesday and Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time for Cannabis Insider. My good friend, Elliot Lane, also does a daily podcast called Cannabis Daily. Go check it out every morning. Subscribe to our newsletter, Cannabis Daily. Check out benzinga.com/cannabis every freaking day, several times a day, at 9 a.m., at noon, at 3 p.m., and at 5 p.m. to get all of your news in the cannabis world, on the psychedelics world. We put out about 40 articles every day. Shout out to Maureen, to Nina, to Yelena, to Lara, to Nico, to Joanna, to all the hardworking cannabis and psychedelics team members on the editorial side. And mark your calendars. We're coming back to Miami. We already
Miami, bzcannabis.com. Y'all, we should make a whole infomercial out of all the cannabis activations we have. But it just means we're your one-stop shop for cannabis right here at Benzinga. That said, we're out. We're done. We got one more show on Thursday at 4 Eastern time. Don't be late. Don't be square. Be there. Javier Haas, love you, my friend. See you Thursday. Love you.